That's
the subject tonight. Jaje means the way things work. Jaje means the way things work. Things work. Kepa means proper or correct. Say chunam.
Chunam.
Tongjang.
Tongjang.
Chunam means all existing things. All dharmas. Chun means dharma. Nam means all of them. Chunam means all existing things. Tongjang. Tong means, do you guys know? You know Tongma.
Empty.
Dongkyang means even though they are empty. Dongkyang means even though they are empty. Yeah?
Sorry, I can't transcribe to that in English and write down your definitions.
Okay. Even though all things are empty, things still work quite okay. Even though all objects are empty, everything still works.
Last week you said even though it's kind of a lengthy way.
We're debating a lowest she said something good. She said you shouldn't say even though, you should say because. Instead of young. You should say because all things are empty, things still work. Things work. But it, you're right. You do see it this way. Up to you. It strikes you. It really is because, but you didn't get that far. Because. Okay. You could even put because things are empty, things work. But we're actually responding to a school that says we're trying to get them out of. Sometimes you take a lower position just to get somebody out of their lower position. This is the big belief of the Uma Tengyura, the highest school of Buddhism, Madhyamika Prasangika. This is their motto. This is their mantra. This is Tsongkhapa's obsession. This is Nagarjuna's obsession. They want people to believe, to understand this. What does it mean? It means how do things work in the world? We can take two examples. We can take medicine, or we can take, let's say, investment strategies. Okay, Mr. Stillwell? Okay. Why does medicine always work? Why if five people take the same medicine, they always get cured?
They don't.
They don't. Okay, who said that?
Me.
Oh yeah, they don't, right? He knows because he works in the medical profession. Okay, so I mean, you know that it strikes you. Three people can take the very same medicine for the very same disease. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So what we're talking about tonight is not just the emptiness of a thing. You know, like the monk is empty, and we talked about it many times. You see the parts, and you project onto those parts. A monk, if you have the mental seed to do that, in a worldly way, if you know what a monk is, if you ever met a monk before, in a deeper way, if your karma allows you to put it together that way, if your own projection allows you to put those parts together that way, you'll see a monk. Somebody else might come in here and see something absolutely different. They have different karma. The question is, what about something working? We're not just talking about one object. We're talking about the way two objects interact. That also has its own emptiness. The way things interact, the way things in the world affect each other, the way when you do something you get a result out of it, those are all also empty. What does it mean for them to be empty? What does it mean for medicine to be empty? As far as its function, as far as how it works. What would prove medicine's emptiness? We proved many times the guy at work's emptiness. What about proving that how medicine works is empty? Then what?
Doesn't have healing properties of its own.
Yeah.
From its
own
self.
In and of itself, it cannot cure you. It is blank. It's as blank or as empty as everything else. It's function. Not just the pill. I mean, you could look at the red pill, and you could say, I see round, I see red, I see these little letters written on it, so I know it's Upjohn's latest, you know, whatever pill. And I project that onto it. But what about when you take the pill and something happens or something doesn't happen? Is that a projection? Absolutely. Every Klinsop Denpa, every normal object in the relative world is a projection. So when you take medicine and it works or it doesn't work, that's also a projection. And it's very important to understand that. That's a big deal in Madhyamika, in the higher schools of Madhyamika. It's very important to realize that it's also a projection when things work or operate. Very interesting.
But what about the case where someone unconscious and is given something that revives them?
Karma works on a level which is deeper than consciousness, than subconscious, unconscious. It's projections can happen. You have dream. You project in your dreams. You project in your own consciousness. You're always projecting your own consciousness.
So
until that person dies, or even afterwards, actually, he'll project his own mind.
So are you saying biological function is a projection?
Everything. What I'm saying is, you guys are hung up on a very interesting thing, and it's not bad. The whole Buddhist, all the schools of Buddhism are hung up on the same thing. Until you get up to Prasangika, until you get up to the highest school of Buddhism, they want to say that, oh, something has to be real, in the sense that something has to be not my projection. I mean, I can agree that certain objects are my projections, perhaps, but when the sun comes up, you know, when the sun comes up, this is my projection. You know, I can project a trillion megatons of energy coming up in outer space, and the Earth turning to meet it, and the sun coming up. Yeah, exactly. That's your projection.
Well, I'm thinking of projection in the sense of taking in data with the five senses, interpreting it with the mind, and forming some image.
Yeah, it's very important. What we're talking about here is, normally when you think of projection, you're thinking of parts. You got this part here. You got this part here. You know, you got the fires down here, and you got this part here, and this is shining a little bit. And the mind fills it in and says, "Oh, that's a pot, and I'm cooking with it." And your mind even sees the back of it. You know, your mind makes this perfect image. Actually, all you can catch at one time is a few of the indications. That's about all you ever catch of a pot. When you're making tea on the stove, you never catch more than about that many indications. And you make a pot. You make a pot in your mind.
Well,
and it's a perfect pot. And you believe it's out there. There are parts there. But when you investigate the parts, when you look at the handle, all you see is that. And when you look at each one of those parts, all you see is that. And if you go deeper and deeper and deeper, you don't find anything. And that's classic proof of emptiness. That's when you look for the thing that gets the label, you can't find it. If you keep digging, you'll never find it. And the Guardian says, when farmers say they plant their seeds and the crops come up, I agree with them. I'm a farmer. This guy at Woodstock, right? Max. I'm a farmer. The Guardian says the same thing. He says, as long as you don't get too deep, as long as you don't dig into it, things work okay. You can accept it. But the minute you start looking for each part, and how do I, is each part presented to me? No. Not ultimately. Relatively. So, but what I want to say is, that's how you, how, what about the sun rising?
See, this is
what about that 10-minute action of the sun coming up over the horizon? What are the parts? What are the parts? We talk about parts over time. Also with the mind stream. Also with the stream of your, with you, of you through your life. How do we know Cheryl is the same Cheryl that was here last week? We get indications across time. You get Cheryl at 8, at 7:39. You get Cheryl at 7:40. You get Cheryl at 7:42. You remember those perceptions. You glue that together mentally with a projection. And you call that Cheryl who was in class tonight. Okay. So the sun itself rising is also a projection. What are the parts? It's the first sliver, it's the second sliver, it's the half round, it's the three quarters round, and it's the full round. And on those parts you impute, you project the sun rising. So actions also. Not just one solid thing, but even the action of something happening through time. And the lower schools couldn't get it. They bumped into that. They got all the way up to actions, and they had to stop. They couldn't accept that. Yeah.
You seem to imply, for instance, using medicine as an example, that there's an unreliability here that depends on your individual karma.
Absolutely. And you've experienced that.
All right. Well, I think maybe that's not such a good example because, well, two people can appear to have the same illness, but it's very, very detailed what's going on, quote unquote, inside their bodies at a cellular level, for instance. The sun coming up, on the other hand, is quite the opposite of two different people taking medicine. It is very consistent for every single being, bug, cockroach, on the planet.
For the time being.
Right.
It'll change. I mean, according to Abhidhamma, fourth chapter, end of the third chapter, it'll supernova one day. It will start to burn up the earth. And people won't see the sun come up the way it used to come up.
But it'll be consistent. I mean, it won't be some people will still see the sun come up and some will have a supernova, like some person taking the medicine and another person.
You can say that all the people on earth have this. We collected a communal karma. We all participated. It's actually true that insofar as the sun is a great boon to us, and in most ways it is, it's a result of our collective virtue. It really is. Everybody on the planet Earth, collected some similar virtue, probably involving giving light to someone who needed it, or heat or warmth to someone who needed it. And that's why we enjoy the use of the sun. There are beings on planets that don't have a sun like that. They're described in scriptures who never have that experience. They don't enjoy that huge collective karmic result called the sun coming up. And the day after you die, you won't enjoy it either unless you're born here again.
But you were leading me with that example of the medicine, that because of emptiness and karma, there's no consistency.
Yeah, there's no consistency in the sun either, I'm trying to tell you.
No, I mean, that would hold up that if some people saw a supernova and some people still saw a regular sunrise.
Yeah.
Some things appear to be very consistent.
It could be.
Also because of emptiness.
It could be, yeah.
The example that you gave up here with the pot is dependent upon the senses, and what I'm trying to understand is if you are not talking about emptiness, how to say it? Projecting seems to me to depend on the senses, sight, sound, etc.
No, you project mentally. When you hear your thoughts run in your head, you're projecting them. That's very interesting.
So how would medicine affecting you biologically be a projection if you're not dependent on the senses or the mind or whatever?
It's very interesting. When you see the sun come up, the sun is not moving. It's your own projection shifting. And that's the whole point of tonight's class. When you see anything change, when you see anything move, when you see anything shift, when you see anything cause another thing, according to what we've said all during this class, and this is the final of, you know, this is the 10th class, right? Those things aren't moving out there. It's a shift in your projections. Your own projections are shifting. It's very interesting.
Meaning your mind. Your projections mean your mind.
Yeah.
Not yourself.
The imputations of your own projections, which are forced on you by your karma. They are shifting. The things out there aren't changing. They're not changing. That's the very interesting thing when they say the Buddha doesn't move, the Buddha doesn't get up, the Buddha doesn't walk to get his morning meal from the people in the town. That's what they're talking about. They're not changing. You're changing. Very interesting. Yeah. And it makes sense according to what we said so far. Yeah.
First of all, the medicine idea. Can you will yourself to get ill or recover from an illness or use come from otherwise, not to react to education and kind of well? So my second question is, all these universal laws that they all
collective projections.
They don't exist at all.
They're all collective projections. They are valid, they're not true.
Answer the medicine question.
Functionally true.
I forgot exactly. Oh, by the way, there is a role in health of being positive. You know, there's a short-term, wimpy, psychological things you can do to try to be well. You know, quickly they break down and you get sick anyway. You know that. The brightest, happiest people get cancer. You know, the best, the people with the best positive attitudes still get in car wrecks. You know, and still die horrible deaths. And still, you know, it is true that in the very short term, your attitude about your illness can affect it. By the way, that's also karma. If it does affect it, it's a projection. That's very interesting. So I'm not saying that. I'm not suggesting that, oh, if we all had a good attitude. I remember this book by this lady who, she said, if you ate health food, you would never get sick. And she got cancer. And she died of the cancer. But as she was dying, she said, I know, I remember eating a chocolate bar when I was a kid. And it's like, come on. Okay. I mean, it doesn't mean don't eat health food. They're what you call kins. You know, they're minor causes. They can help affect your health. But the mainstay of your health is going to depend on something else. And we'll talk about it. So that's motion. That's change. Change in the world is what? When things change or move, what's happening? Your own projection is varying. The cause is varying. The cause, like all other change things, goes through its own cycles and its own swings. And as your mind swings, as your own projections swing, things appear to change. And that's the only thing going on. They're not changing.
So you have this data out there, which you are receiving and interpreting according to your karma. And so your karma and interpretation is fluctuating, and so you see things happening.
Yeah,
What is the data doing that's out there?
Now, listen to the answer, okay? Do you want me to focus on the data, or do you want me to back off and focus on the events?
The underlying data is what I'm
looking for. Oh, you want me to... Okay, underlying data.
Uh-oh.
It's also a projection on its part. Back off.
Yeah,
there is underlying data.
Yeah.
There is objective underlying data. Now, if I focus... You ask me, what's the nature of data? It's objective.
No, I said, what is that data doing?
It's a projection also.
What is that data doing? What's happening?
It's appearing to be those things. It's suggesting that to me.
I always try to get to this. What is that data, you know?
No, there are, in the case of visual, if I see someone walking, there are changes in the shapes and colors. There are changes in shape and color being presented to my eye. And when I start to investigate one of those shapes, it too is only a group of smaller shapes. And when I investigate those smaller shapes, but if you say, just leave it alone, is there data suggesting to my mind that someone's moving? I say yes.
But you can never get to it.
You can never get to it. That's Tanita Pitata Soishina Minibe. It's a very famous
Majibita. Yes, conventionally? Then yes, conventionally.
No.
No, we're talking about...
Even on a conventional level, you can't reach it. If you never go deeper, you can reach it. If you only stick to the guy walking, you can say there are colors and shapes being presented to you that suggest a person walking. And that sema means that sema draws a valid conclusion from those. It is valid. They do suggest validly, properly, a guy walking. And it's perfectly reasonable and proper for me to say there's a guy walking there because I saw all the colors and shapes that would suggest a guy walking. But when I start to look at those colors and shapes, I can't find them either.
But then you're saying...
you brought in a brand new word. You said there are objective data. Does objective mean nominal?
Objective means as long as you don't look deeper, there is nothing.
Objective means subjective.
There is stuff being presented. It's only subjective when you look deeper. Subjective until you look deeper. There are objectively colors and shapes there that suggest that I'm walking.
Excuse me, but then when John says, cheerfully, those data out there, that really means that if you had the blessing to be perceiving emptiness directly at that moment, you would certainly not be perceiving those as data.
You couldn't perceive them at all if you're not a Buddha.
Yes, so that in fact they are in a sense, I don't know if this is too wild, obliterated by the direct perception.
Well, we don't have the capacity, a non-Buddha mind doesn't have the capacity to focus in the two realms at once, the two totally different realms, and we can't focus in both at the same time. It's not that the other things don't exist while you're there.
Michael, are you saying that impermanence is subjective,
and there's
such a thing?
I'm trying to say that. When anything moves, when anything changes, when anything causes another thing, it's just your projection.
So you couldn't say of something out there that presents itself to the senses that it's a caused thing, that it came into existence?
It is.
I mean, when you only when say it comes into existence as a result of your projection.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's true. And that's why it's a caused thing.
Why can't you just instead say independent on and not as a result of? It's quite different.
Because tonight I'm trying to emphasize moving, cause and effect, things changing other things affecting other things, medicine making you better, and investment making you wealthy. Okay. How do they work? Why do they work? If you think about it, a lot of the suffering of the world, when you get into this subject deeply, it's very interesting, because most of the suffering of the world, maybe all of the suffering of the world. We used to talk about getting mad at the guy at work and not getting mad at the guy at work. But what if, all the suffering in the world is caused by people expecting some result from some cause, and it doesn't come some of the time, and that gives them disappointment and suffering and confusion and anxiety. You know, if you knew cause and effect perfectly, if you knew how to get rich, period. I mean, we've been on this planet I don't know how many millions of years, people. If there was some objective, scientific way to get rich, don't you think they would have figured it out by now? I mean, why are we still struggling? Why are people still fighting and debating and worrying and writing in the magazines like Forbes, you know? It's always funny, you know? On page 10, there's an article about this guy that took a risk and succeeded, and he's brilliant. On page 20, there's an article about this guy who took a risk and failed and was stupid. And they took the same risk, you know? I mean, why? People in the whole world are struggling to get something out of life. We're trying to be happy. We're trying to obtain things. And we're looking for the way to do it, the method, or the causes, or the strategy for our lives that will bring us the results we want. We all get up in the morning and get out of bed for that purpose. We all get up for the purpose of going out there and obtaining what we hope to get, and apparently we don't understand the causes very well, because we don't always succeed.
Isn't going to extreme, they're saying, you still have to go to work. If you stay home, nobody's going to send your paycheck home. So you make it sound like...
Some people do stay home and get paychecks.
How can we trust the law of cause and effect?
Well, yes. We'll get to that. I'm not touching it yet. What I'm saying is, the apparent causation going on in the world doesn't work. If you walked up to the door of an airplane, and the stewardess said, "We almost got this figured out. You know, we almost know what causes a metal to fly in the sky. And there's a 50% chance you're going to make it to Chicago tonight." You know? we're really close to understanding it. And it falls down half the time. But come on, get on the plane and there's a good chance you'll make it. You wouldn't get on the plane. Because they don't understand the causes for making it fly. And you would be afraid to get on the plane. What I'm saying is our whole life is like that. We don't understand the causes for success or obtaining money or friendship or happiness or anything. And every day we get up, we go and try different things, and they just don't work. They don't cause what we want.
Yeah.
So you can see that.
So Newton almost had it right. It just goes too far. Instead of saying, "Hey, everyone, I discovered this great thing. There's an absolutely existing sun out there, and the Earth is absolutely rotating at an absolute..." Instead, if you backed away a little bit and said, "I made this great discovery about our collective karma. But there's a very strong consistency in our collective karma. To us, it will appear on a very regular basis that the sun comes up every day." that would be much more accurate if he said that, rather than
there. The other one is not accurate.
That's what he said, and that's what everyone believes.
Yeah.
But he was, if you modify it slightly and say actually his real discovery was the amazing consistency in everyone's collective
up, karma. Up towards this one. Option.
That's right.
So far.
Does that mean all the arguments about the parallel universe?
No, there are other realms.
There are other realms. I'm talking about the existence of the universe as you see it, or think it is.
Oh, no, yeah, when you see the stars move, or. It's possible that the universe is created by a Big Bang, but all this is saying is that. That Big Bang was the result of collective perception. Projection
from
what? It doesn't mean there weren't Big Bangs. There could have been Big Bangs. From us now, looking back, and logically, does suggest a handle, and it's valid for you to think there's a handle out there, although mistaken.
But that data, as you keep looking at it, disappears.
Deeper. Yeah. And so science can tell you that. I mean, I've read books from the 50s where they were just discovering about atoms, and they said, you know, when you walk into a room, your feet never touch the floor. And, you know, ultimately, when you look into the atoms, and they don't know how light works still. They don't know whether it's waves or particles. They can't decide. It doesn't fit either one, really.
Can you take this and put it into one of the chi's of, like, when you're talking about how we perceive things and how those perceptions come to be in our mind, how we do that?
Yeah.
That movingness, that result, where does that go?
Yeah. Vinci, almost always a Vinci. Meaning you've seen the thing before, and you know that it's attacking you, driving down the street.
That's it. We're also having a mass hallucination.
That's one of the two truths. You remember that truth means reality. It's one of the two realities. What people translate as relative truth, I hate that word. It has nothing to do with relative. There isn't any word like that in any of the scriptures with reference to that. Kunzo means fake. Kunzo means false. Truth in this case means reality. It's false truth or false reality. Deceptive reality. What does deceptive mean, still? I mean, when you say the car dealer deceived me, what do you mean?
Means it isn't how it appeared when you bought that.
It wasn't the way it looked to me, okay? He said he's giving you a great deal. When you get home, the car stops working. And you figure out that the guarantee was written for last year. Okay? I mean, that's deception. And that's exactly the case. Nansul the Netul Mitumba, the way it looks and the way it really is, don't. What do you call it? Jive. They don't. What is it? They don't.
Dovetail. Mesh.
That's the word. They're inconsistent.
I like jive.
Okay, jive. They don't jive. The way it looks, the way it really is, don't correspond. Okay. They don't correspond with each other. That's deception. That's the meaning of deception. Why do all these objects around us, why are they all called Kunzo?
Because we think the dog is barking because he's hungry.
We think he's barking, I don't know why. But if you hear a dog barking, what is it? If it's unpleasant to you.
It means you've done non-virtue to
have that result. Yeah, you did some non-virtue, you bothered other people.
Yeah, with some.
And now you have to hear that. Okay? It is not out there on its own. If it gets quieter for a few minutes, and you feel better, and you feel something nice. In other words, it changed from being irritating to something peaceful. Then that's a shift in your projections. He didn't stop barking.
So why are open receptive?
Because it looks like he stopped barking. It doesn't look like your mind suddenly shifted and now that sound doesn't come anymore. It doesn't look like that, does it? It looks like he's not barking on his own out there. Doesn't it? That's the meaning of prism. That's deceptive reality.
But that same reasoning, though, if someone was beating someone up,
And then the next day he came around and said, I apologize, I was angry with my wife, it had nothing to do with you. That, we would say that didn't happen? Or that was our projection? That would be our projection.
It's jajay tepa. Things work. It is your projection, and that's why it happened. That's what I'm saying. Because it's your projection, it happened. If you tried to tell me it wasn't your projection and it still happened, I'd say, come on. Now you're talking crazy. If you come up to me and say, something happened at work today that wasn't my projection, I'd say, yeah, right. You're crazy. Okay. So that's Kuzo. The lower schools say there's two kinds of kunzo. It's actually stuck to the young dog. Sometimes they say the thing, sometimes they don't say the thing. Kunzo, you know. Kunzo is what?
False reality.
Fake truth. Okay. Fake reality. False reality. Deceptive reality. I like deceptive reality. It is real, but it is deceptive. It seems to be one way, but it really is another way. But after all, it does do something. In that sense, it's reality. Deceptive reality. Yan Dagbe means right deceptive reality. Right. Right. R-I-G-H-T. Okay?
Is that correct?
Yes. Lope means wrong deceptive reality. The example here would be a pool of water. A lake that you see while you're driving.
A mirage.
No, a real lake. The example here would be a mirage.
You call it accurate conventional reality and inaccurate conventional reality.
In other words, do mirages exist?
Yes.
Sure. Are they what they seem?
No.
But they are both in control. Do pools of water, do lakes exist?
Yes.
Yeah. Are they what they seem?
No.
No.
Yes, they are compared. They are compared to a mirage. Right?
What?
Can you drink a mirage, please? Can you drown in a mirage? Okay. Obviously, there's a difference in their reality between a mirage and a lake. I mean, a lake can do what it seems to do. And a mirage can.
Those aren't changing
right?
The way that we just discussed.
Does this have to do with the perceptions, with correct perception and incorrect perception?
It's really valid perception.
But do you agree that a mirage can't drown you and a lake can? Right? And you agree that this one is what it seems. This one is not what it seems to be, and this one is what it seems to be.
Okay, but the
Madhyamika Prasangika says you can't make this distinction. What are you talking about? What, you're going to say that something, you're going to say that a lake is what it seems to be?
Conventional reality is.
Is a lake ever what it seems to be?
No.
Ultimately not.
Relatively speaking, is a lake ever?
Yes.
No, this is exactly the debate that the two Mayimika schools
have.
Precisely the debate. Instead of going through 50 pages of some topic, you can listen to some. Is a lake ever what it seems to be? This is exactly the debate they had.
Conventionally, yes.
Conventionally, is a lake ever what it seems to be? So ultimately, it's not what it seems to be?
Correct.
So ultimately, something exists? Is anything exist ultimately?
Not the way it seems.
He's right in a way, okay? Relative to what an Arya sees in the path of seeing directly, this is all wrong. It's silly to make the distinction, says the Prasangika. It's silly to say a mirage is not what it seems to be, but a lake is what it seems to be when you talk in relative to the path of seeing. Relative to that, neither one is what it seems to be. You shouldn't even make the distinction. It's not a valid distinction. You're not thinking in big time terms. You're not remembering that Arya see that everything is not what it seems to be. It doesn't matter whether it's a mirage or a lake. Neither one is what it seems to be.
It's like saying how many different inaccurate categories can you create within the inaccurate category.
How crazy are you?
Like, yeah. Exactly.
You're a little crazier than
it's a fierce debate between the schools. It's a real distinction. But you get the point. The point is this. When we talk about things working and things causing other things, does anything work the way it looks to you? No, it's very interesting. Does anything work the way it looks to you? Do you get paid because you went to work? Is that why you get the money?
Conventionally, yes. Ultimately, no.
Yes.
No, it's not true. A lot of people go to work and don't get paid for it. I mean, the company went bankrupt, and they wait 2 weeks, and it's Thursday, and it's time to get paid. And I've seen it. I was standing there when the treasurer of the company was getting roughed up by some people. And he said, we don't have any money to pay the check. They came to work for 2 weeks, and they didn't get a check. So it's tough. You know, that's not how it works.
Michael, are you saying that the distinction that's made in Prasangika about correct, valid perceptions is not this distinction?
Yeah, right. Does that mean do with this? Maniak Prasangika says both are, they say this distinction is wrong. But that's not what I want to talk about. Get back on the subject. Does anything in the world work the way you think it works?
No.
That's the whole point. Ultimately, that's the whole point. Nothing works the way you think it does. If I go to work, and I made diamond deals all day today, if I can somehow give the guy a misimpression of what I need, basically a lie, and then he sells me the parcels cheaper than he should have, and I make an extra $500, did the $500 come from my lie?
No.
No connection? Yeah, it can't. The nature of $500 is sweet. The nature of a lie is sour. They're never going to create each other. No connection, actually. Very interesting. Things don't work the way they look like. Nothing. And that's why we don't get the results we want out of life. We don't understand that. It's true. It really is true. If you wanted to get perfectly contented and wealthy and well-fed and respected by all, and just keep your morality. It has nothing to do with how clever you are, or what things you do, or how you manipulate your world, or how, you know, how good you are at wheeling, dealing. Nothing to do with it. It all depends on your keeping your six perfections, keeping your morality. That's the only cause of the sweet things. It's not connected to anything else. It looks like something else, but that ain't the way it is. That's why the Madhyamika Prasangika says, don't tell me about good investment strategies and bad investment strategies. The only investment strategy is to give your money away. Okay? If you want to get a good... If you need a good investment, be generous and be generous to holy objects. I mean, the best, the highest thing you can find, be generous to it. If you really want a good investment strategy, it's the only investment strategy. Don't talk to me about this one didn't work and this one worked. This one was wise and this one wasn't wise. They don't work. You know that. You can see that. Smart guys go bankrupt and stupid guys get rich. I can do it to you. I can take you to meet someone. But you know, you giggle and then tomorrow morning we'll be up again working at work for those. That's not what causes it. And you'll forget all this. And you'll go back to believing in that other functionality. It doesn't work. Yeah. If you want a pizza place to open up next door, give people food.
It seems to me you're not making a distinction between conventional reality and ultimate reality here. Are you intentionally inferring that conventional reality doesn't work, doesn't function, that only ultimate reality functions?
No. Saying that if deceptive reality seems to work, it's because of karma.
So you go up, Nina gets up, she goes to work tomorrow, you know, puts in her week, gets her paycheck.
You guys didn't see 9 to 5 where the office girl became the vice president because she met this handsome guy and, you know, nothing to do with her working, you know.
But you would you say, though, at a conventional reality or deceptive reality where this is functioning, this is working, or would you not even say that?
No, I'm saying it works, but it only works because of your projections forced on you by your karma.
How did they even bring this forth that this could hold true? I mean, what did they...
Because apparently, it's quite apparent. It seems quite logical to say that there's a difference in the reality of a mirage and a lake of water. One can drown you and one can't. Okay? That's not a crazy distinction to me. That's not bad. Yeah.
Well, if I may, back to the dog barking, for instance.
Please.
That's just a projection. No, we have nothing to worry about because there's no dog out there even at all barking.
That's a classic one.
So therefore,
we have nothing to worry about. Because
no, by what you're saying.
I never said that.
There's a projection of a dog.
But I said
a projection of a dog barking, and there's a projection of the rest of you folks in the room here. But if you are
only
really
projection, I'll give you a projection of a dentist drill on your nerve and your tooth. And you'll see
well, which is it, Michael? Which is it? If you are all merely my projection, then I guess I'm the only being that exists, and
because
I'm having a bunch of projections of a bunch of other beings talking.
Because we are your projections, you are not the only being that exists.
Michael, so what's the point of not making a distinction? I'm still not getting that.
It's again, I'll say it again. The whole point is this. Nothing works the way you thought it did.
Right, but why is it...
Why distinguish between good investment strategies and bad investment strategies when they're all irrelevant? They have nothing to do with strategies. It's whether or not you gave, whether or not you are generous or not. What I'm saying is
that's
real causation at work.
That's begging
the question.
No, I'm just saying...
It's a trivial...
It doesn't... What's
the
trivial? I'm talking about how to get rich.
If you have...
Maybe not
if you have a karma.
If you're powerful in this life, at least comfortable, at least very comfortable in this life.
We've been trying to distinguish between things that function in a conventional way and things that don't function.
That's what they're trying to say. This doesn't function the way it looks. This does function the way it looks. This cannot drown you the way it looked like it could. This can drown you the way it looked like it could. And Madhyamika Prasangika says, they're both bullshit. If you drown in something, it's because you did something good or bad. It's very interesting. She really made it clear. I didn't make it very clear.
Mike.
They say this is wrong because it doesn't work the way you thought. This is right because it does work the way you thought and you can drown in it. Prasangika says, you don't drown in anything, honey. It's your own projections on your forced on you by your own karma that make you think you're in some liquid drown. Do you really drown? Oh, yes. Does it hurt? Oh, yeah. Is it a lake that you thought it was? No. Sometimes,
yeah. Yeah. The things... doesn't seem to work the way they appear. It includes the karma. So it's imbalanced to say that I drown because of bad karma.
No.
The bad and good is...
Is karma itself a projection which is consistent? Yes, it's always consistent. Due to the nature of ignorance.
So the statement that eventually somebody drowned because of karma is invalid?
No, it's valid because it is a projection. Get out of this thing of saying that things don't work because they're projections. They do work because they are projections. If they were not projections, they could never change anyway.
But then can't the mirage drown you just as successfully as the lake?
Yeah.
It's conceivable.
It happens in children.
If you had
yet.
By the way, what you're getting into is how a miracle could occur. What you're bordering on here, what you're flirting with, is how a person could fly in the sky, or how you could wave your hand and suddenly the sky would change colors. It's possible. How you could walk on water. But all those things are totally quite proper. That you're bordering on, you're flirting with the possibility of a miracle and why miracles are possible, why they do work.
Yeah.
why there can be miracles. Collective projections of a man walking on water. And one guy loses his, he gets some touchdown, down, and he sinks. Yeah.
So are you saying that there's a being that serves as the basis of my perception of the dog, and then because in addition
there are parts
to that,
of a dog.
In addition to that, then I have the karma to perceive that being as a barking pain.
Those parts, yeah.
So it's not just my perception, there's also a being out there.
We're back, it's the same old question. I'll answer it one more time.
But are there other beings or not?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
You don't
so it's not
a
just projections, it's other beings. It's other beings and projections of how they appear to me.
It's data presented to you which suggests the existence of other beings.
Well, suggests the existence of other beings and the existence of other beings are two different things. Which is it?
Leave it. It's a lumaten. I can't answer your question because you're stuck on self-existence. Your question is based in self-existence. I can't answer.
No, is there one?
Can't answer.
There's no being.
Either answer I give, you think it's self-existent. That's a classic unanswered question.
Yeah.
Which is my pleasure to do. Okay. We take a break.
Hey, Mike, can I rephrase that question?
I don't know. Can
you? I need to talk with Dr. Fenton and the Yibis. When you keep looking for the data, you'll never find it.
No, I want to ask it differently. So we take this data and we project onto it beings and sentient beings and non-sentient
reasonably,
things.
Because it does look like that.
So why is it that we project onto certain data that it is a sentient being and not project onto the wall that it's a sentient being, for
your
example?
Own karma. Your own karma. And the people in the hell see the mountains on each side of them move closer and squash.
As living beings in some sort of
way. Not like they're not smiling or anything, but they do see solid mountains shift and start to close in on them and actually crush them.
I'm supposed to see that too.
Okay, have some,
Michael.
The lower schools. I'll wait till you finish
writing.
I'll give you an example. Let's say when Mrs. Clinton was running the United States, in the early days of the president, and people said, he's president, but only in name. What does that imply? When you say, Bill is president, but only nominally, what does it imply? In everyday speech.
He's not president. He's not acting as
president. He's not really acting as president. She's acting as president. He's got the title. She's doing the, she has the authority. That's the implication. And we use that in normal everyday language. We say, he's nominally president, but she's really doing all the actions. She's the one who really has the authority, and she's the one who's really doing something. So normally, when you say nominally or in name only, it implies in normal everyday English and in Sanskrit and Tibetan, it's not really working that way. He's not really doing that thing. When you say, he gave us a raise at work, but it was only nominal on paper, it implies that you didn't really get any real money. Okay? It means like that. So on paper or nominally, in normal English, and even in ancient India, implied, not really. And the lower schools get hung up on that. The mind-only school has this presentation of three kinds of objects. Some are nominal, some are really functioning. So they draw that distinction between if something exists only by a label or a name, that implies that it's not really working that way. Yeah.
Doesn't it also simultaneously imply that there's some possibility of there being a real president to which Clinton only partially reaches?
Well, you got the name.
No, but there's an ideal in your mind as if that was a real presidency that anybody could really achieve.
Yeah, but that's okay. I accept that. But let's stick to this. So in everyday English, that's the normal distinction, right? When you say nominally, it means not really. And the lower schools stick to that distinction. They say when you say nominally, you don't mean really. The Mandalika Prasangika says nominally and therefore really. Okay. Just your projection and therefore real. Like a movie and therefore real. Like an illusion and therefore real. Lower schools say like an illusion and therefore not real, which is what you would normally say. And they say the same thing with cause and effect. We're talking about the emptiness of cause and effect.
We're getting all caught up in this.
This statement is by the lower Madhyamika school. The lower Madhyamika school emptiness. Because they cannot understand the real emptiness of cause and effect. They say, we agree things don't have a self nature, but we can't accept that they have no nature at all. They have a problem with that. They say, okay, I understand how things can be empty, blah, 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 blah. But seeds produce plants. That has to be some kind of nature that they have. That nature has to be inherent in them. When a seed produces a tree, that proves some kind of inherent nature. They didn't catch that cause and effect is also a what? Projection. They said if a seed causes a tree, they must really have some inherent nature. They couldn't catch that that also is a projection. If and when you take an action at work and it results in the results you wanted, that's because of some inherent correctness of the action you took. It's not because of some projection that you have.
Is what they do.
Right. Now you see, all of these differences, it's very, very interesting, by the way. You can't really understand Buddhism until you understand the differences between all the four classics of Buddhism. You can't really understand Buddhism until you can stand up here and say, this is what Abhidharma believes, this is what Satanika believes, this is what Satanika believes, this is what Mandalika believes, this is what Yogacara believes. You can't really explain all the differences, or if you're not aware of any of the differences, you're not very deep into those concepts. And you'll get... The reason to learn them all is that they're all very subtle and almost correct. The best mistakes to know about are the ones that are very subtle and almost correct. You know, who cares about the obvious mistakes? If you know all the very subtle and incorrect views, then you really understand your own view. And the thing that separates the lower schools from the higher schools on almost every point is their inability to see the emptiness of actions. The emptiness of cause and effect. It's almost... All the distinctions drawn between the schools are based on the lower school's inability to understand the higher school's explanation of emptiness. It's interesting. All the ideas that the lower schools come up with that are incorrect are based on their misunderstanding of emptiness. Very interesting. And here's a great example. You would be tempted to say that seeds have a nature to produce trees, independent of what I see or not. Independent of my projections, seeds produce trees. Prasangika says, no, if and when a seed produces a tree, it's only a shift in your own mind. It's only a shift in your own projection. They can't catch that. They can't go that far. They understand the tree might be my projection, or the seed might be my projection. But the tree growing out of the seed? How could that... It's like QuickTime video on a Macintosh. It's so smooth. It looks like the real thing, you know? There's no jags. You know, it doesn't stop. It doesn't seem to be dependent on me. It seems to come out at its own speed and grows. It takes 10, 15 years. The tree grows. I mean, it can't be that it takes 10 years for one of my projections to work itself out. I'm sorry, yes, it did. That's hard. And they get stuck on it. Yeah.
Are you saying that the that karma excuse me, are you saying that karma doesn't impact the outside data and cause it to arise in a certain form, to be perceived in a certain form, that karma only is the functioning of your mind?
Mind-only school says.
I know, but...
You're describing mind.
Well, that's what I thought you were saying.
No. I'm saying... mind-only school says that karma, which... There's a karma which creates your perception of a seed growing a tree. And that same karma is creating a seed in a tree growing out there.
But you...
But the nature of both on that. It's a long story. I don't want to mix it up.
But didn't you just say, though, that your karma causes... If a tree grows from a seed,
yeah,
it's only your karma causing your mind to perceive it that way.
Yeah.
And my question is there some... Is your karma also causing the outside data to do something?
Yeah.
So it's not only your mind.
But it's not what I want to
answer. Is an outside thing that's occurring?
Of course. There's some data that's presenting itself to you.
Okay.
By the way, the Madhyamika Prasangika school says that is outside data. The mind-only school says that's not outside data. And that's another distinction drawn because of this. I don't want to get into it. But you see this, okay? I'll repeat it. And by the way, I mean, we take 4 years to study this subject in the monastery, full time. You know, that's the normal length of time that we study this subject. If the lower Madhyamika school says, when you see a seed produce a tree, it's a seed with its own nature producing a tree with its own nature. It cannot be just my projection. And the higher school says, because it's your project, because of your projection, the seed appears to give the tree. And you can pick fruits from that tree and eat them and get chubby, and they work. Never think that they don't work. They're illusory, and therefore they work. It's very deep. Okay, last thing for me.
When you say the emptiness of cause and effect, Michael, you're not talking about the emptiness of karma, are you?
That's what we wanted to get to there.
By the way, I was just talking about cause and effect, like trees and plants, trees and seeds, okay? Now I'm moving on to karma.
Good deed and a good result.
Say kunshi.
Kunshi.
Do you remember what kunshi is? Anybody?
Place
where all the box. Yeah, nice. Place where all your karmic seeds are stored. The mind-only school, which is the other half of Mahayana schools, right? They say, when you do a good deed, or when you do a bad deed, that seed goes and parks itself in a certain separate consciousness that you have. Not just your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body, and thoughts. There's a seventh consciousness called kunshi. And that's just hanging out there. It's like a big balloon. And every time you do something, you create a karma. It's like a marble. And that marble gets thrown in that balloon. And it stays there in that consciousness until it comes out. They say there's a separate consciousness like that. Mind-only school.
Okay.
Semtampa. Also called.
Is that Alaya
Vijnana? Huh? Yeah, Alaya Vijnana. Okay. Some people, I think it's translated from Chinese as what do you call it? Storehouse consciousness. That's not bad. It doesn't reflect the real the meaning of the act. That's not a. It's a meaning translation and not a word translation. So kunshi is where. That's the place where all those karmic seeds stay until they choose to pop out and produce some result. You do a good deed, it puts a seed in the kunshi called a bhakcha, and that stays in there, and then someday it flowers and you get the karma back. Okay? They have... By the way, does the high school of Buddhism accept the idea of the kunshi? They say, not necessary. Why are you going to all the trouble of saying there's a kunshi? They say, the Buddha said there was a kunshi. Oh yeah, there is a place where he did say there's a kunshi. He was just trying to help you guys. Okay. There are places where Buddha said there is a creature. There are other places where he said, I was just trying to help you guys. There is no creature. Big debate.
Where
did
he say there is no creature?
Mm-hmm.
Where did he say there is no creature?
I like that thing. Well, he did say there are six, and that's all it is. That's the reason. And Madhyamika Prasangika says to Mind Only School, the reason you have to come up with this kushi, and the reason you were attracted to that statement by the Buddha, and the reason why you really strongly believe there has to be this separate place for the mind, for the karmic seeds to stay, is that you don't understand the emptiness of consciousness. You don't understand that when you do a good deed and get a good result, and when you do a bad deed and get a bad result, that's a projection. It's just your projection. Don't understand that, so you got to come up with all these weird things. That's also the basis for one major difference between our schools. You never got it. You didn't understand how when a karma, when a bad deed flowers into a bad result, when a good deed flowers into a good result, that also is just a projection.
So is the Bach Chakra projection?
Is there anything which is not a projection? In other words, what you're seeing here, all this whole discussion tonight, you didn't have all this trouble when I talked about Mike the Monk. You know, that was a pretty easy example, or the pot. You were okay on that. And so is most of the schools. But when you get into why things change, or why I get money, or why an airplane takes off, or why a seed grows into a tree, or why when I do a good deed I get something good back 100 years later, your mind starts to bump into self-existence again. You want to believe in, you kind of think it has to be that way, or it couldn't work that way. In other words, you bump into some objects where you think, no, well, that's not a projection. I mean, I can see where Mike the Monk might be a projection, but not when the sun comes up, or not when I do a good deed and I get a good result 100 years later. That's no projection. In other words, we're exploring the limits of your ability to accept the idea of projection. Sooner or later, you bump into things that you think can't be a projection. And Madhyamika Prasangika says, come on, keep going. Everything's a projection.
And
most of
the higher schools say, how do these things evolve?
They work because they are a projection.
But how does the projection continue?
As your projection.
You mean, how's it carried?
How does it, where is it stored? Where does it stay? How does it continue? By the way, they say in your mind consciousness. You don't have to positive sense of consciousness. That doesn't answer your real question. No. That too is a projection. No. That too is a projection. Its staying is also a projection. It's not, it's being stored somewhere and not running away and not dying out.
How can you account for the consistency, the inevitability of cause and effect?
It's similar to Tom's question. Yeah, I understand. What you and what Tom was saying was, if things are just a projection, then why is it that every sentient being through all of time has the same projection about karma? When you do a good deed, you get a good result. Why couldn't the opposite projection be true? If everything's just a projection, then why can't the opposite? Why can't the opposite happen? Why can't there be a miracle and you do a bad deed and you get a good result? If it's all just my projections. It's deeply tied to the nature of ignorance.
How so?
So even the concept that...
What I'm saying is that there can be laws. Mm-hmm. There can be laws that always work the same way. And they can still be a projection.
But it's consistent for the Buddha, too, and he hasn't got it.
Right.
Well, so...
It's outside of karma.
No, it's not. You said the Buddha called it dirty karma.
Dirty karma. You don't call it karma.
What?
You call it stainless virtue and moonlight.
That's not the Buddha collects karma.
By the way, I should say that if you ever get in a debate in the monastery, karma normally means the cause of suffering.
Yeah.
I mean, normally in a debate or in a book, you don't talk about the Buddha's karma.
So even laws like a good deed can only produce a good result is merely a projection, and someday we will rise to the point where we will see that that doesn't even work.
I didn't say that.
Not that it doesn't work, but that it doesn't exist.
I didn't say that it works because of that. It always works because of that.
So then there must be some nature to a good deed.
It doesn't have to do with your ignorance, or the Buddha wouldn't have to say
the nature of emptiness.
It doesn't have to do with ignorance, or the Buddha wouldn't have to
say. Yeah, I understand. He doesn't have the same karmic results. They don't call them numbing. They don't call them karmic right.
But there's still this good lead.
Yeah.
So what, how does that work? What guarantees that? It's based in nature. I mean, it's in nature. But the Buddha isn't ignorant. I understand. Could one say that in the way that intellectual understanding of emptiness leads to direct perception of emptiness, that believing in the law of karma leads to the place beyond karma?
You could say that. I mean, observing the law. We make a distinction between believing in them and observing them. Observing them is interesting. By the way, we'll say one more thing. She brought it up. There were schools that said the other classics. Now you get to the real, I mean, why do we talk about all this tonight? What's the whole point? It has to do with karma. And it has to do with the classic of all wrong view. I mean, what would you imagine, especially in Tsongkhapa's eyes and Nagarjuna's eyes, Chandrakirti's eyes, the big guns of Majjhimika, okay? It's the classic one is that, I told you the hotel story, right?
Yeah, morality doesn't make any sense.
Joanna Macy always comes. The lady, they go to a Buddhism conference for women or something. A girl, they all go out to check out. One of the girls drops her suitcase. It pops open and all these hotel towels fall out. And she gets all red. And then she says, oh, it's all empty anyway. So it doesn't matter that I stole them. And then that's the classic, that's the ultimate wrong view. Because things are empty, they don't work as in meaning of karma. And I don't need to do the six perfections. I don't need to follow bodhisattva morality. I don't need to follow vow morality. It's all empty, so it doesn't matter. Ultimately, it can be anything I want it to be. Therefore, I can do anything I want. And that's the meaning of tantra. You know, I can do any bad deed I want. And if it's all empty, I can make it turn out any way I like. I mean, that's a classic long view.
Oh, thank you.
You said that's the meaning of tantra.
No, classic long view, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's the classic long view of what you hear about. Oh, I'm beyond all that. I read I read Tsongkhapa on that today. And he was saying, you know, here in Tibet, some people think, I don't need bodhisattva morality. I don't need my normal morality. I'm a tantric practitioner anymore. He says, that's like eating poison, you know, like insane. You know, they're putting a gun to their own head. It's crazy. Because everything's empty, you must follow those rules. You must observe karma. Yeah.
What if you learn to be more of those who came up with
them? I'll tell you in a sec, okay? By the way, I just want to say there was this Chinese monk named Huashang, which I mentioned him before. Apparently in Tibet, he espoused this view. And that was one of the people who had that problem at that time. She asked, and this is very, very important. You know, generally Buddhism says you have to investigate everything. Don't believe what the Buddha says. Don't take anything on faith. The laws of karma, you can understand in a logical way, roughly. You know, you can understand that a good thing or a sweet thing or a thing that helps other people can't give you a sour result of pain or mental or physical pain. You can understand that. And you can understand the opposite, that if you harm someone, or even yourself, cause someone else pain, that the result cannot be any kind of happiness or pleasure. Cannot be. They're inconsistent with each other. But the exact workings of karma, why, if you do certain bad deeds, which in your society are acceptable, they are going to cause you suffering. Or why certain bad deeds that don't seem to be particularly harmful to anyone are going to bring you heavy suffering. Buddha, that's in the class, it's the third class of reality. Remember those three stages of reality? There's evident reality, blue, yellow, white. There's subtle reality. Who's there? Emptiness itself. Then there's a deeper level of reality, which is even more difficult to perceive than emptiness. And that's the workings of karma. So if you're smart, if you're a good educated Buddhist, on the subject of karma and what it will bring you, you just throw yourself to the Buddha's feet and say, outline it for me. Tell me what's good to do and what's bad to do. What will create what kind of result? We don't have the power to see it directly. And that's why the Buddha taught the Vinaya. That's why he taught the Jataka, the birth stories of the Buddha. So those are not just nice, friendly stories for children. Those were taught with the specific intention of the Buddha telling us what kind of deeds create what kind of results, because we could never figure it out in detail. It's beyond us. It's a more deep reality than emptiness. And that's what the books say. If you're smart, if you get to a certain level in your Buddhist education, just sit down and learn what the Buddha said is more and what's not. That's the best advice I can give. Go study the books on morality and follow them. Even if you can't clearly see why that would be. That's not a very Buddhist answer. But that's why he spent 16 volumes of the Kanyu, 16,000 folios, just explaining what good deeds cause what good results and what bad deeds. You have to study morality that way. You have to. We're going to do it next class. Next class is on Bodhisattva vows. You have to dig into it. You have to just learn them one by one by one by one by one. You couldn't figure out everything yourself. It's not a place for logic and intuition and extrapolation. It's a place to go and just listen to what the Buddha says. You know, this is right and this is wrong. Trust me, this is going to cause some suffering for you. I don't care if it's acceptable in this society right now. You know, I don't care if this is not acceptable, it's proper. You have to trust the Buddha. But then we really have to learn them. We have to take a great interest in learning all of this codes of behavior that the Buddha outlined. They're very fun. And when you start doing them, if it's right, then you get some kind of pleasant result. Okay, so that's all. Let's start. Mr. Diley. Thank you.